This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and we are delighted to have Barbara Blamis in the studio. She's the executive director of Aqua Alliance, which is tackling the difficult and multifaceted problems of preserving and protecting Northern California waters in rivers, streams, and aquifers. Thanks for being with us, Barbara.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So happy to have you here. At a recent CHECO meeting with the representatives of the Department of Water Resources, you were cited in the ER as speaking directly and forcefully to DWR representatives about bungles and worse in the Oroville Dam crisis. Can you talk to us about this for the hour?
Well, yes, we could go on for many hours when we're talking about DWR, the Department of Water Resources. Just for clarification for your listeners, let's start with who are they?
Yes, good.
And most people, as I did years ago, when you hear California Department of Water Resources, you think they are a state agency that works for the public. They do not. They are an agency that is beholden to their state water contractors. Their budget, the lion's share, I think close to 80%, at least historically, has come from the energy like dams produce and from their contractors. And so their view of the public is very different because of that. I mean, so I almost think of them like a corporation unto themselves. Fortunately, the legislature has some authority over them, but they have been viewed as such an important and agency in moving all this water historically south of where it starts, starting with the Owens Valley. You know, DWR didn't do that, but in California, we have started moving water from north to south with great rapidity. And they continue that with their what they consider the gem of the state water project, which is Oroville Dam. So I just wanted your listeners to understand they aren't like, you know, the Department of Social Services or something where you could go plead to them and they might care about you as an individual.
I just have a little follow-up question.
Yeah, yeah.
How did they come into being? What created the DWR?
They evolved through the 20th century, as did the State Water Board. But the Department of Water Resources started to take form in the 50s, and then, you know, as the creation of the State Water Project, which is also started prior to Pat Brown, but Pat Brown, the current governor's father, took a hold of it and got the public to support it through bonds so they could start building this massive project. And there, you know, the 50s had some significant flooding, you know, and it made sense to a lot of people that, you know, we need to tame these rivers, and flood control was supposed to be a huge part of it. And then, of course, there was the export of water that was probably not as well understood by the California public at the time.
And let me inject, too, that Sacramento Bee has recently reported that Governor Brown misled voters about the cost of building the nation's tallest dam, ignored recommendations to delay construction, and dismissed allegations that substandard materials were used to build the ambitious project. So it goes back right to the beginning of the Oroville Dam project.
It does, and I rarely like to
go ahead.
give credit to Ronald Reagan, but I have to say, thank goodness that man, when he was governor, someone was smart enough and invited him to the North Coast. Otherwise, all of the rivers on the North Coast would be bleeding through the Sacramento River and heading south. I mean, because that was the plan. All of the North Coast rivers. They got the Trinity, but they didn't get the others because Reagan went fishing, saw how beautiful they were, protected them under a new Wild and Scenic Act in California, and then when he was president, did it in federal. under the federal law.
I didn't know that either.
So, you know, you can work with odd bedfellows at times.
Yeah,
and he sure came through on that one. But that's kind of background on the State Water Project.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This meeting, when I arrived, and thank you for providing enough time so I can give your listeners this kind of detail. I arrived and I saw sheriff cars and CHP vehicles, many of them. And my eyes enlarged, and I went, my goodness, what are they expecting? And I came in the back door, as I'm wont to do when I can, to kind of check out what was going on. And three burly CHP officers were in the back of the room. And I walked by them and stopped immediately and turned around and smiled at them and approached them. And I said, are you here to protect us or to protect them? And they were a little surprised. One of them went, well, it depends how it goes. Another one caught on to my jesting and said, oh, no, we're here to protect you. And I said, well, I'm glad to hear that. But clearly that, to me, set a tone as soon as I arrived. Mm-hmm. It's like... They are so frightened of the public that they have to have law enforcement there to protect them. The other thing that then I was pleased, I had a pleasant conversation with Supervisor Larry Wall, but I was surprised there were so few people actually in attendance from the public. Maybe everybody had attended the other meetings in Butte County. But I didn't see a significant number of Chicoans even, which really surprised me. Almost a third to maybe almost 50% of the room was filled by agency people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So it made the room look really, you know, it made it look like a decent crowd, but it was slim. And there were only 5 people that wanted to speak. So that tells you also that it was, you know, there was a small crowd there. They started out kind of with a regular dog and pony show, but, you know, kind of boring, which is typical of an agency, you know, but they were attempting to express early on that, you know, they're sorry. And I also noticed, you know, they didn't send some of their personnel that are like the burly CHP officers. They weren't. They sent this small woman, Cindy Meeser, to look soft and, you know, demure and apologetic. And the other agency guys were all small men who were also kind of soft spoken. And I thought, boy, you really picked people intentionally. But when I was speaking, I could see that even with that personality, it appeared that I was dealing with, I saw some red faces and some clenched jaws. I was pleased that the sheriff's office sent a deputy. I had hoped that Sheriff Honey would be there because I wanted to thank their office. And so I asked the deputy to please thank the sheriff for making the hard call, that it was the right thing to do, and that I've praised him to everyone I've talked to since.
Mm-hmm.
Their presentation was short, which was probably appropriate. But they didn't address one thing, and right off the bat, I wanted to deal with it. At the same time, though, I also disclosed, because I thought the audience deserved to know, that I have personally, and my agency, an adversarial relationship with DWR.
Right.
I mean, and it seems fair. I wasn't there to try to kid anybody. But I asked them about asbestos, that they hadn't mentioned it at all in their presentation. And I thought, you know, this should be at least included. Whether you think it's trivial or not, you should mention that asbestos has been, an asbestos material has been found over there. And they addressed it, they thought, to the best of their ability, that issue at the end. But the thing that is the most disturbing and always has been about this agency is, it comes back to what I explained earlier. They don't answer to the public and they don't think of the public. And so health and safety of the public is not part of their thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, and maybe all of them are wonderful people, but they're in a culture. The speaker before me brought up culture, and it's interesting because that was exactly where I wanted to go as a cultural anthropologist. I wanted to bring up that it's a systemic problem in that agency. There are so many engineers in the agency. It is so politicized because water is money. And so, and where their funding comes from keeps them kind of in this elite, you know, like they have an elite aura that we're so special and our needs are special. Our water contractors are so special. And the public almost is irrelevant. And where I first encountered this, and I brought this up when I was speaking, was in 1994, when the drought water bank was occurring again in Butte County during another drought. And the water districts in southern Butte County decided to ramp up the amount of water they were going to transfer by selling their river water and then pumping groundwater to keep growing rice. And because of the increase, nearby orchards, people that are dependent on groundwater to grow their crops, broke suction. They had no water. They were going, where in the heck the water table go? And then the next thing you know, these impacts were marching north towards Durham. And so a lot of the homes, the rural homes that have their own wells, were also running dry. People would wake up in the morning, they had no water. And people started sharing water from household to household with hoses. One day somebody'd have it, the next day it would reverse. Like the aquifer was just all over the place, like it didn't know what to do. And then Durham had to shut down one of its municipal wells because, again, of this water movement, they developed a water quality problem from it. Okay. So when these people, many of the people in Durham at that time are agriculturists in their own right, and thought, you know, we're neighbors. We could go talk to the water districts and they will listen to us and we can work this out. Well, when they went to Western Canal Water District and asked, could you change timing? Could you maybe use a different well? Could you do something because you're harming us? And they were told to go hire an attorney.
Oh my God.
And that was a rift that has never mended mm-hmm. in this county. And DWR acted typically as badly when they were asked, well, look what's happening to us. You know, we are being impacted. They responded, prove it. There's a drought. So I wasn't even aware of this when it was happening, but I was approached by some of the farmers afterwards who recognized they cannot work with the people that get river water, that they were going to try to work with environmental people that mm-hmm. might have some compassion for what they were going through and how it would affect streams and riparian habitat and fish and all kinds of other things if this continued. So anyway, the distrust of DWR goes back a long ways. And how they handled this dam crisis is just indicative, again, of, you know, we can't look bad.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I was out of town, so I was monitoring all of this, thank goodness, you know, on my laptop. I had, you know, so I could on the internet, I could see, read the papers and communicate with people. And day after day, you're getting this, everything's fine. Nothing, you know, we've got it all under control. Don't worry. And I'm watching the numbers, you know, how fast that reservoir is filling. And they're not warning anybody to even consider getting ready. And this is one of the things I just practically pounded the podium about at that meeting. It's like, on Friday, they called the evacuation, the sheriff, on Sunday. On Friday, I could see what was coming. I mean, it's like you had to be a dunce if you knew where to look, that this big trouble is headed this way. And so we put out a call to all of our members yes. to contact anyone you know in Oroville and tell them, one, get ready themselves to get out of there. Be prepared. Two, if there's a neighbor that would need help or has animals or is elderly, please contact your neighbor. You know, so I mean, I didn't know what else to do. Felt so helpless and could not believe that the agency that's in charge of all this is not even putting out, you know, a gentle hint that people might need to get out of there.
What was your guess as to what was going to happen at that point? Was it going to be the main spillway, or did you just think that they would have to resort to the emergency spillway?
I could see they were headed to the emergency
spillway.
They're going
to the top of the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then knowing, you know, I could see all this frantic but ludicrous behavior. I mean, it's like they're pulling out trees and trying to put cement down like 3 days mm-hmm. before they're going to pound it to pieces. I mean, the whole thing seemed idiotic. You know, almost again, like, you know, trying to make it look like they're in charge and we've got a plan. So, of course, you know, Sunday the sheriff calls for the emergency evacuation, and many people in this county were affected either by having to flee or trying to help people that were fleeing. And of course, that was one of the good things to see, is that this county really rallied around the people that were potentially in a life-threatening position. So the meeting, my concern about the asbestos, I'll tell you about what they raised. Their secrecy, and I hit them hard on secrecy. I said, you know, you wonder why people don't trust you. You know, and I said very clearly, no one trusts you. After that, you know, it's like, I haven't for years, but, you know, believe me, you know, I'm actually pleased that so many people have figured out that they cannot trust you. You know, and I said, and right now we've filed a Public Records Act request. Hundreds of you mentioned, you know, that hundreds have, at least 100 that's been in the Sacramento Bee.
Right.
And you're dragging your feet. I said, even for PR purposes, public relations, make an effort. I said, but, you know, if you really want people to trust you, you have to do more than just, you know, lip service to, you know, to stopping the secrecy that is so ingrained in your agency. And that's when I saw clenched teeth, and it's like, they did not like then. They did not like being told that no one trusts you. They suggested that there's very little asbestos there, and that it's all under control. When I brought up, well, what are you doing to contain it when it's now getting extremely hot? There's going to be dust. How are you controlling it? Well, the Butte County Air Quality Management. Well, that's one thing I could, again, like the sheriff, I knew I could count on, because I worked with Butte County Air Quality Management District when the Humboldt Road burn dump cleanup was occurring, and they came through for the public big time. I trust them, I know them, and I've seen how what their culture is and how they behave. And it's very scientific, and they have authority. And so I feel somewhat comforted on the land-based issue with asbestos, but I've been able to receive no information, DWR, from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife or from the Federal National Marine Fisheries Service, nothing about asbestos and aquatic life. Mm. And it disturbs me tremendously. I mean, they're saying they've found very little. How much do we know has been dumped in the river? How much has remained in the river? How much of it, I mean, I assume a lot of it went downstream with the flows that they had, but it's almost like they aren't considering it. And so we're going to stay on top of it. I'm glad that I'd be happy if there was very little of it, but I don't trust this agency, so I don't know how much has been pounded out of that cavity, you know, that cavern that was created by the massive flows that came out of Oroville to basically save the dam.
I just want to, this would be asbestos in the rock that was eroded, not in the original dam construction.
Correct.
You are serpentine.
It's a natural occurring. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not serpentine. It's a different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different material, but it is an asbestos that can have, you know, cancer causing, you know, mm-hmm. it has cancer causing properties.
So is there a hierarchy of control or of authority, and who's ultimately responsible, and are there people who are interimly responsible? Like, people show up at the meeting, it could be this person, it could be that person, it could be that person.
At DWR,
yeah,
you mean?
Right.
Well, ultimately, Bill Croyle, who was thrust into this as an interim head of the agency, because the former one bailed out, and right before this, but not knowing it was coming, I would hope. But, you know, he's the head of the agency, and he's beholden to the governor.
And has he been talking with people? Do we
His face was at least there through a lot of these press conferences that were held in Oroville. And he, I have to say, of many DWR people, he has comported himself well, I thought, other than, again, it's like, why didn't you admit this is frightening and people should be prepared to do something, like get out of there? You know, and if they had huge animals, large animals, get them out so you don't have to wait for a crisis, you know, to try to take horses or cattle or, you know, which we know all, there are people with them in the Oroville area. Anyway, I was the sole person there that was expressed anger. The gentleman before me is with American Whitewater, and they had made a settlement over the Oroville relicensing, and he's still trying to get along with them. But he had good things to suggest also about how the agency operates. And the other three people asked rather minor questions, and so they were not exactly hit hard here in Chico, but I know that they have been, they've heard a lot at the other meetings. One of the things, the legislature, interestingly, is, and appropriately, holding hearings on the dam, but I... it'll be very, very interesting to see what they do long term, because again, this agency has acted so autonomously.
If they act responsibly, what kind of directions would you like to see them take? I know that's a huge question, but mainly in terms of water quality, and then beyond that, dam safety and the safety of the Oroville population.
Mm-hmm. You know, like a family, sometimes it's too dysfunctional and there has to be a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I think that needs to happen with this agency. I mean, I don't think they'll ever recover to become something that's sensitive to the public, and I think we'd need that. The flood control part of this state water project is about people and property, and they have operated like it's all about supply,
right.
Moving water. And I don't think that the agency, the way it is, can have enough disruption or oversight by the legislature. I think it would have to have a dramatic change.
And how can that happen?
Well, the legislature has the capacity to do that.
They do.
Yes, they do. And it would have to have a supportive governor, and I would say that would be potentially the next governor. That we have some candidates that are running that are opposed to the twin tunnels, for example, that Governor Brown still wants to complete his father's state water project.
A lot of talk, too, about whether DWR, at a minimum, should be removed from operating the dam, that another agency should come in, though I can imagine huge difficulties in making that kind of arrangement.
But, right, yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. But if I had the magic wand, that's what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we take a short break? We're talking with Barbara Vlamis. She's the executive director of Aqua Alliance, Protecting Northern California Waters. We've talked about the dam in this first half of the program. In the next half, let's talk a little bit more broadly about the effects of this winter on our water supply, where water has been going, and what you see happening in terms of Aqua Alliance's priorities.
Foreign, beautiful rain, don't disturb me, beautiful rain. Oh, come, never come, oh, come to me, beautiful rain. Oh, come, never come, oh, come, never come, oh, come to me, beautiful rain.
Rain,
rain, rain, rain, rain, beautiful rain. Rain, 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 beautiful rain. Oh, come, never come, oh, come, never come, oh, come to me, beautiful rain. When the sun says goodnight to the mountain, I am dreaming of the sun, say goodnight. When the sun says goodnight to the mountain, I am dreaming of the sun, say goodnight. When the sun goes down, the birds on the trees are singing sweet for the night. When the sun says goodnight to the mountain, I am dreaming of the sun, said goodnight.
When the sun goes down, the birds on the trees are singing sweet for the night.
When the sun says goodnight to the mountain, I am dreaming of the sun, said goodnight.
When the sun goes down, the birds on the trees are singing sweet for the night.
When the sun says goodnight to the mountain, I am dreaming of the sun, said goodnight.
Rain,
rain, rain, rain, rain, beautiful rain. Rain, 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 beautiful rain. Oh, come, never come, oh, come, never come, oh, come to me, beautiful rain.
You are listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and we've been talking with Barbara Vlamis, who's the executive director of Aqua Alliance. We've been talking about the Oroville Dam crisis, and we're going to come back to talking about some things that Aqua Alliance is working on. But we have a couple more questions related to what we've experienced this winter with all of the rain that has filled all of the those things that
reservoirs.
Hold water.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, the question really we've followed the newspaper articles and have had, like you, high praise for the Enterprise Records coverage. I haven't read any articles that talk about where the floodwaters have been going, mm-hmm. and I'm puzzled about that, whether it's all going south, whether it's going into storage, whether it has the Delta in particular been helped out by all this water. If you drive to Oroville, you see it's up, still up over the banks in the Riverside Park, and the dumps have, I think they've shut off the spillway at the moment, but a week ago they were doing 35,000 cubic feet per second, which is a lot of water.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you know about where that water is winding up?
Well, some of it has, by sheer volume, flushed somewhat the Delta. And the rivers, and it's, you know, that is nature's way of cleaning things, and we need it more, actually, not less, to keep things naturally healthy. But as I was showing you, there's this wonderful one thing that the scientific side of DWR, they produce material that is quite illuminating, and one section is about the reservoir conditions, and they are all over their historic average. Shasta, for example, is almost 96% full, so way above its historic average. And Oroville is the lone reservoir that's under that, but we understand why, because they're trying to manage the water as they can while they try frantically to fix the spillway. But so a lot of this has been going to storage, and sadly, as I understand it from my fishing colleagues, because I contacted them, knowing this is their area of expertise. Oh, how, I mean, because I saw that the fish are still being hammered. I'm going, what is going on with all this water? Why are the fish still getting clobbered? And what they explained to me is in all the micromanagement that we humans think we can do to manipulate nature, these biological opinions that are issued by agencies that have jurisdiction over fish, one is a federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the other is a federal National Marine Fisheries Service. They put together these biological opinions that are supposed to guide behavior. Well, when the San Joaquin River flows are high, because they have also had a very successful wet year, they don't have to curtail the pumping at the delta pumps that move water south of the delta during the spring periods, which can be very, very hard on fish. And so they've had kept those pumps going full bore, and the fish are getting sucked in. And the delta smelt are on the verge of extinction, as they have been for years. I mean, and they're getting down to, like, they find, you know, one or two when they do their trawls for the fish. It is very troubling. Mm-hmm. That again, all this oversight that's supposed to happen, that is supposed to keep supposedly nature and commerce in balance, it's not happening, mm-hmm. not effectively.
Well, indeed, I was reading the Sacramento Bee over the weekend, had a story about the water district's reporting. It said during California's epic five-year drought, most of the state's irrigation districts didn't comply with the 2007 law that requires them to account for how much water they're delivering directly to farmers. During the heart of the drought, just 24 of 123 water suppliers reported each of the 4 years. Several of those appear to have turned in reports with incomplete data. So a lot of us, even though it's pumping south, the water districts don't tell us where it's going.
Yeah.
How does this big winter affect some of the political battles that we're having, like the Sites Reservoir and the Twin Tunnels?
It'll have no effect.
They'll have no effect.
No. I mean, the people that have wanted to build Sites Reservoir, they've been trying to do this for 30 years.
Right.
The Department of Water Resources is the one that came up with the conclusion that it wasn't worth doing because it's so hot over there and it's going to be like this warm bathtub. So much of it's going to evaporate, mm-hmm. and that they could never use that water in the river when you might need it during the summer.
So that's a done deal?
No, it's not a done deal. It is... That's why it's been going on for 30 years.
One of the things
that is appalling. Here's another appalling thing, and it helps everyone that no matter what end of the political spectrum or in the middle, wherever you are, is how you can't trust people. I mean, the people that are proposing this have to create a feasibility study. Well, that would give you a lot of information about, is this thing really doable or not? Well, when we've asked them about that the last couple of years, what they say is, well, we're getting letters of support for our grant.
Right.
And we'll release the feasibility study when we turn in our application. So they're asking up front for all these counties to support this project with them knowing nothing about it.
Yeah.
Not a thing. And, as I said, DWR, in the 80s put out reports showing how infeasible it is.
Okay.
And then there's always the toxics that are over there. You have towns named Chrome and Cinnabar for a reason, because there are heavy metals there, yeah. just like there are in the coastal mountains down near Westlands in mm-hmm. the yeah. southern half of the state. Yeah. And it's like, Lord, you don't want to mobilize that. But, people, there are certain things in our culture, and, storage sounds so good. And,
right.
It's like anything can sound good conceptually, but you have to have some facts to mm-hmm. understand something. And we're holding out to see the feasibility study. But they're making it very difficult for the public to understand it in advance of their seeking bond money from all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I had an important question. What about groundwater? How is groundwater and how have aquifers been affected?
Have they fared during this really robust year?
Because I don't understand groundwater
at
all.
We just looked at the results of Butte County's monitoring. They release reports in the spring and the fall. And I'm not surprised about what we saw because groundwater is not like a bathtub. It's not like you open a spigot, it goes away. Yeah, I mean, it fills, and then you pull the plug, and it drains. Well, water moves differently underground, and so it is there are still many wells in Butte County, the monitoring wells, that are in what are called stage 2 alert levels, which are the most serious. There are others that have dropped from a stage 2 to the a stage 1 alert level, showing some signs of improvement. But that's hardly like, you know, our groundwater has recovered, you know. I would say, theoretically, with the snowpack and knowing that our Tuscan aquifer, some of our water is coming from recharge in our streams and also subsurface flow, it's going to take time. And one of the things I know that Jim Brobeck, my colleague, and I have stressed here many times about groundwater is that when you're dealing with the deep aquifer, which is where Cal Water wells that supply Chico are drilled, the deep wells that Glen Calusa Irrigation District puts in on the west side of the Sacramento River, also in the lower Tuscan, that water was analyzed by scientists from Lawrence Livermore Labs. They came and spoke at our conference in 2012. And one of the things that they pointed out is that is fossil water.
Wow.
That water does not refill
10,000,
quickly.
20,000 years old.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah. And so when you're tampering with that kind of a system, you're really creating long-term problems for yourself.
I want to throw in another factoid here from the SAC-B about misbehavior during the drought, that Central Valley farmers created a groundwater deficit during the drought large enough to fill an empty Shasta Lake 7 times in order to keep their profitable orchards alive during the epic 5-year drought. And again, that won't be restored. There was some palaver in the paper about it'll come back. But you've taught us on this show that also there's subsidence that also makes it impossible or very difficult to refill those aquifers. But yes, the total amount there was 40 cubic kilometers of overpumping during that era. And these are the folks who, again, want a lot of Northern California water to continue doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So the ground is not like a sponge. It can't, when you pour more water on it, it can't refill and get all those spaces back that they crushed.
That's right. That's right. Well, and on the issue of what we're doing to ourselves, you know, it's, you know, history has shown what societies do to itself, and we are creating our demise. And even though there have been laws passed that are supposed to demand, as you just pointed out, at least can we start keeping track of what people are using? I mean, we aren't even doing that well. Our regulatory systems, and people hate regulation. They've been so trained since the 80s to hate regulation as if it's anti-public protection. And what we need is significantly more protection of the public and the commons, what we all depend upon. And what's sad is that has diminished with political influence and the bashing of agencies that try to step up and do it, like the Environmental Protection Agency, and curtailing their budgets so that, of course, they fail because you don't have the capacity to do what they're supposed to do, their mandates. And so our own culture, speaking of DWR's culture, our own culture has to, and I am encouraged by what I saw in some of the people that were supporting Bernie Sanders, that, I mean, I have not heard from young people that were that articulate and were so dedicated to a change. And I was pleasantly surprised and hopeful that there is some momentum of, because the Sanders campaign brought in all a cross section of humanity, and that there may be the momentum to really make a significant change. And though we have a president now that also ran on change, you know, I think, like I said, the public was ready for something different and tired of what appears to be the same old thing. I just think the person we have now may send us completely off the rails, but we can all hope for better. But I am hopeful that there is an awakening in multiple generations, that they have to be involved, because nobody is going to hand it to you on a silver platter, and there are too many vested interests and too much money in politics.
Barbara, could you talk a little bit about the status now in perhaps new activities of Aqua Alliance, continuing efforts and any new efforts on the base, other than giving hell to the DWR.
DWR, whenever the opportunity presents itself. Yes, I well, some of what we do, of course, is continuing, because because a lot of this is the long term. It's not an easy fix, as it were. One of the things that we're working on right now is the Twin Tunnels, which is also called the water fix. I could not believe when the governor decided to change the name of it to the water fix. But we are currently, and I just watched today, it's great theater today, down the State Water Resources Control Board, where DWR and their partner agency, the Bureau of Reclamation, are applying for a change in point of diversion so they can siphon off Sacramento River water just south of the city of Sacramento. Two-thirds of the average annual flow is the potential of those tunnels. And these hearings are being held. We're in the second year of them. They will go into a third year, I have no doubt. Last year, Jim Brobeck and I went down with our colleagues, the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance and the California Water Impact Network. There were 9 of us, but Jim and I were the representatives of our region.
And I just want to insert here that Aqua Alliance is the only organization here in Northern California that's protecting water interests and taking on the Twin Tunnels.
It is amazing that we're the only ones representing the public. But last year was our opportunity to present, because it's very rigid how these are done. It's almost court-like. Mm-hmm. We had the opportunity to present how this would harm people, not the environment, just people. And we presented some very damning information, and DWR was quite upset by our testimony that demonstrated the tunnels are going to create create more water transfers. And they kept pressing us when they could cross-examine us. It's like, you really think this is going to increase more water transfers? And my jaw just went slack. It's like, where are we not connecting? How do you not think this is going to increase the transfer potential and actuality? And it's in their own documents. And it's like they were trying to deny it publicly.
Well, as Jim told us on this program, too, the tunnels are overbuilt. They can consume, as you said, two-thirds of the flow of the Sacramento River, although various agencies have said, oh, we'll never take that much water. Well,
yeah,
you wouldn't
really
build a pipe that big if you weren't planning to
fill it
sooner or later grab it.
That's right. So we're still doing that, and today our colleagues were down there presenting more information. rebutting testimony and going at it in, like I said, in a very legal way. And Jim and I will go down there again this year. At this time, though, it will be the opportunity to present how the Twin Tunnels could affect the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So we will do that later this year. We're also on water transfers. It's a huge issue for our region. And as if people were able to listen to the whole show, they heard about 94 and how that raised the specter of real threat to this region. When the districts in Southern Butte County wanted to transfer water, well, they're still at it. The people south of the Delta, you know, they have, you've heard this before, junior water rights, many of them. And so when there are dry or limited water years, they try to buy water on the market. And the water districts up here can make big money, you know, selling water. And sometimes they don't use groundwater, and sometimes they do, which hurts their neighbors, hurts the health of the aquifer up here. So as you recall, we are still involved in our lawsuit against the 10-year water transfer program. We do expect a decision. I expected it this spring. Now we're approaching summer. So as soon as I hear, I will let you know, because I'm sure your listeners would like to know the outcome of that lawsuit.
Absolutely.
And then we're also heavily invested in using the Public Records Acts, both the federal, which is the Freedom of Information Act, and the California Public Records Act, to pull information out of the agencies like DWR that are hiding things. Right now, we have 4 Public Records Act requests on Oroville, 2 to DWR and 2 to the governor's office, 1 on asbestos and 1 on the general dam conditions and engineering and all of that stuff. We also have, and here, these have not moved to lawsuits yet, but we're threatening them every step of the way. If you don't produce something by a certain date, we will go to court for relief. We have 2 attorneys that are absolutely wonderful who work pro bono for us.
Nice.
Because you almost always win in Public Records Act cases, and so they're happy to take them, and I'm so pleased that we have these wonderful men who see the value of our work and will fill their time helping us get records. Right now, we are in court with DWR over a 2015 transfer. We're still having to fight these people. It's okay. This is, again, the slog. It's the long, you know, this is being the tortoise, not the hare, is that you teach an agency by doing this.
Right.
And so it's like, we are not going to back down. We have someone who will stay with us, and we will use the courts to force you to become a more public and responsible agency. And they could have resolved that issue in 2015 so easily, but again, they are so arrogant. I asked a simple question. Could you please tell me, this was in August, have your transfers started? If so, when? Are they continuing? I mean, they could have basically said, yes, they started at such and such a date, you know, and they're continuing, and you could even be friendly, and we'll let you know when they stop. They sent me to a website. I went to a website that they sent me to. They were the applications for the water districts to participate. That doesn't tell you that anything started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I went back to them. They sent me a DVD of the same thing. And I said, this is not answering the question. Then we got the attorney involved, and they have been fighting this tooth and nail. So we're going to have some gems once we finally get this stuff, because they clearly don't want us to get it.
We're going to have a celebration. We're just about out of time, and so we're going to have to get you back, of course, again. I don't know. I think you might hold the record now for being on Ecotopia more than anybody else. Our guest has been Barbara Vlamis. She is one of my big heroes. She is the executive director of Aqua Alliance, which is a really significant, Steve's going to pitch for him, really significant positive effect. And they need your support. and we want
they do
you
need
to support
your support.
Them.
You can go online to aquaalliance.net/support-us-donate, or just go to the website aquaalliance.net, and you can find the donate button there. It's expensive to do this kind of thing. You have pro bono lawyers, but you also invest a lot of money in other attorneys. We're really grateful for the work you do, and urge listeners to pitch in, check out aquaalliance.net, and contribute to the cause.
If I could just add that, yeah, we're going to have to raise probably $60,000 for mm-hmm. our 10-year water transfer lawsuit, because we know it will go to an appeal. No matter who loses, right. it will right. be appealed.
Right. Yeah, so go to Aqua Alliance on the web, and you will find a place where you can donate. Do 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 do